Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment and how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name is Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting from Portola Valley, California in the San Francisco Bay Area. And today's show is going to air on, May 18th, 2007. Well, what's up? Well, this past Sunday was Mother's Day. And one thing I can say for certainty, which is that all of us autism moms out there, whether our children still are autistic or were autistic, like in my own case, we certainly deserve a big bouquet on Mother's Day, because I can't think of any moms in any community that deserve more, more love and thanks than these moms in this community for what they do every day for their kids. Anyway, I myself actually was on the road on Mother's Day. I did make it home for dinner with both my sons. In fact, Max, my formerly autistic son, who's learning to drive, he's almost 16, he drove to the airport with his dad and my other son to pick me up from the airport. So I was so happy to see them both on Mother's Day, both my kids together. And I myself was on the road last week visiting my mom in Buffalo. She's turning 92, next week. And so I was there spending Mother's Day week with her. Also, what else has been happening. Last April, I actually had the show after this, but I recorded it before this, the Joint National Conference on Homeopathy, which is run by the National Center for Homeopathy. We had a great conference this year. It was in Denver, Colorado, and I found it to be a very meaty conference this year. There was a special focus on miasmatic treatment. And I know many of you have asked me questions about miasms, and I do intend to do a show about the role of miasms, which are essentially disease tendencies or disease sort of ways of categorizing people according to what types of diseases they get. I will be doing a show about that sometime in the fall, I think, probably September, October, something like that. Anyway, at the conference, they talked about many, severe diseases. There was talks about diabetes and the related to that, this new syndrome X, about cancer, about the role of homeopathic treatment in dying in hospice care, about eating disorders, inflammatory bowel disease, and a couple talks about treating vaccine injury, something that our community cares about. Etc. So I always encourage everybody on the show to join the National Center for Homeopathy. They really hold our community together. Next year's conference is in April in Rhode Island. And to find out more about the National Center, just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. So before we move on to today's show, I also want to remind first-time listeners that this show really is based on my book, which is called Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. And if you want to learn more about homeopathy, one of the best ways to do that is to buy and read this book. It is used as is one of the primary patient education books in the country, but it's even used as a textbook at the homeopathic schools. Just go to impossiblecure.com, and you'll find lots of free information on that site. There's a page about homeopathic treatment of autism that includes referral lists to practitioners. On the home page, on the right side, you'll find a pointer to the annotated archives for this show. And I do encourage people to listen to past episodes of the show. There's also the Cure Stories database, where readers and people who visit the site can contribute their own homeopathic experiences. There's information about ordering Impossible Cure, including bulk orders. And I always encourage anybody to send me email with questions or suggestions for the show. You can send it to Lansky@ImpossibleCure.com or alansky, A-L-A-N-S-K-Y, at autism1.org. Oh, just a note about the book as well. Many of you might not know that there is a German translation of Impossible Cure available, and as of the end of 2007, early 2008, there will also be a Greek translation of Impossible Cure available. So let's move on to what's happening today. Today is another interview show, and I'm going to be interviewing a California homeopath, Deborah Olenev. She treats many autistic kids in her practice. She has she has a relatively large pediatric practice, but it's a general practice. And in fact, she is my own homeopath. So I'm happy to have her on the show today. And let's see, in June, I'm going to be finishing, it's really the third part in a sequence of shows on alternative methods of homeopathy. In April, I talked about sequential therapy, and in fact, I did have some complaints from one practitioner of sequential therapy. She was unhappy with what I said, although I feel I'm coming from my own standpoint. I always say this show is about classical homeopathy, so I did give the classical homeopathic view of sequential therapy. And I do give my reasons for everything I say. I know, of course, that there are so many different kinds of practitioners who affiliate themselves with homeopathy. And I know most of these practitioners are sincerely trying to help their patients, and they do get results with many of their patients. But certainly from my perspective, classical homeopathic treatment should be the first line of treatment, and can get the deepest and the most far-reaching cures. This is my view. So what else can I say but give people my opinion, because people come to me, ask my opinion, and I try to sincerely say how I feel. I personally have no stake in this. I do not practice homeopathy myself anymore. I do not get any money from this show. I don't get any money from any other practitioners or even from people who write to me and ask for help. So I just can sincerely give my opinion on the various methods of treatment. Okay, so let's move on. I just also wanted to say, in July, there will not be a show because I'm going to be in Canada on travel. Every year, my family goes to Canada. So, so let's move on to today's show. Before I bring her on, I'll give you a little brief bio on Deborah Olenev. Deborah began her homeopathic education in 1983 when her daughter was a few months old, and I got to say, her daughter is the most wonderful, beautiful girl I've met. She's an amazing, amazing girl. And interestingly, the reason why Deborah sought out homeopathic treatment was because her daughter had a bad reaction to her first vaccination. Sound familiar to many of us? Anyway, so she started exploring homeopathy at that point. She is a graduate of Barnard College, which is part of Columbia in New York City. And at the time, she was working for a publishing company doing copy editing and proofreading. And they had given her a free book on homeopathy that they had published. So when this happened, she started reading more about homeopathy, and then suddenly, like happens to many of us, got completely swept into it and has devoted herself to homeopathy since that time. In 1990, Deborah and her family moved to Menlo Park, California, which is near where I live, and eventually she received her certification in homeopathy in 1993. And she now has her practice in both Palo Alto and Mountain View, which is all in the San Francisco Bay Area, near where I live. So without further ado then, I'm going to pause this and I'm going to call up Deborah and we'll bring her on the show. Just a minute. Okay, here we are with Deborah Olenev. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Amy.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Yeah, so thank you for coming on the show. As you may or may not know, most of the listeners to this show are parents of autism spectrum kids.
Okay.
And so, and I know that you treat several of these kids in your practice, so that's going to be the focus of our discussion today. So why don't we just begin, though? I've given everybody a brief bio about you that I got from your website.
Okay.
But maybe you can talk a little more about how you became interested in homeopathy or how you... just your development as a homeopath.
Oh, boy, that's a long story. And I also do want to take a little bit of time today to talk about that supportive parent plan, which I'm doing with homeopathy for the parents of kids with parents with autistic children. And I've been working a lot with these families in the last 2 months, and so I want to kind of talk to you about my experience with that because it's been really interesting.
Oh, I really want to hear about that. I don't even know about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so should I talk about that first or talk about myself first? What would you prefer?
Well, why don't you start talking about yourself just for a couple, like a minute, and then we can move into this new thing you're doing.
Okay, so I started my homeopathic practice about 24 years ago. Well, my homeopathic education, when my daughter was about 6 months old. She had been given a vaccination, and we felt that it had harmed her. And around that same time, Harris Coulter wrote that book, DPT, A Shot in the Dark, and there was some stuff on the TV about the dangers of the DPT vaccination. So that kind of was one of the things that pushed me into the homeopathy. And then I had a friend who had lupus, and he, over a dinner conversation, started to talk about it and sparked my interest. Meantime, I had a book on homeopathy in my bookshelf that had remained unopened for about a year and a half. I was working for a publishing company, and they had given me a free book. So I picked up the book, I read it, and it just transformed my life. I instantly fell in love with it, and I knew right away that this is what I want to do with my life. And you know, they had a list of pharmacies and the National Center for Homeopathy and all sorts of different organizations. I immediately wrote to everybody, got on everybody's mailing list, and started my homeopathic education. So I was living in New York at the time, and I studied with people like, Robert Stewart was teaching at that time. I studied with Vega Rosenberg for 3 years. Roger Morrison was teaching, was commuting from the Bay Area to New York, teaching a Materia Medica course where he went from A to Z, and he was coming once a month, and I took that course as well. I studied with Dr. Kondigabi, who was also coming and giving lectures. I studied with George Vasulkas. Basically, I had a lot of influences, Sheila Creasy, those kinds of people in those years. Then in 1990, I moved to California with my family, and I contacted Randall Neustetter, and many of you know him. He wrote a book called The Child Health Guide, and he also wrote several books on vaccination. So he permitted me to apprentice with him. So I did that for a year, and then I worked in his office for a year. So I got some... you know, understanding of how do you run a homeopathic practice from him, and a lot of wonderful information. And then I sat on the first class of people who took the CCH exam from the Council on Homeopathic Certification. So I did that, and I think the year was 1994. And so I've been practicing in the Bay Area for a long time now. And in the last couple of years, I've been working, focusing more on the children and with special needs. But my practice is really a general practice. I treat people from all walks of life.
I told everybody you're my homeopath, too.
Oh, okay. Right. So I'll tell you a little bit about the what happened with this, what I call supportive parent plan or family constellation homeopathy. Okay, do you want me to do that now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, anyway, so a few months back, you know, the idea came to me that often children need the same remedy as their parents. And with autistic children, actually with any child, you know, you're not getting the homeopathy is so verbally based. So much of it is on what people tell you, and when, you know, if a child is not verbal, it becomes very, very challenging. So I decided that I'd like to have a look at the families, look at the mom, look at the dad, and look at the child at the same time to see if I can get some clues as to what the remedy the child needs is, just to get a better understanding of what's the genetic connection. And I've done now about 15 families in the last couple of months, and it has been absolutely fascinating. One of the side benefits of that is that the parents are getting homeopathy. I think a lot of the parents of the autistic children, they focus so much on their children and they neglect themselves. And so this is really an opportunity for the whole family to get healing. And it's been fantastic. The first family that I did, the mother needed natrum sulfuricum, the father needed mercurius, and the child needed mercurius. And I came to the father's remedy by studying the child's case. And what was interesting was that he had a lot of involuntary movements and all sorts of things like that. This was the child. And then as I was reading, the remedies with those kinds of involuntary movements, I read a little bit about the mercurius. And one of the things it said is that people who need mercurius often have a big obsession with cars.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Yeah, because cars are it's a metal that moves. And what is a car? A metal that moves. So mercury is a metal that moves, and cars are a metal that moves. So this dad has a huge obsession with cars. He just had his head buried in car magazines all the time. That was his love. He worked in a, as a mechanic, that sort of thing. And so here you have a child who's, has a lot of the mercurius symptoms, and this is the remedy that the father needed. So I ended up giving the father the remedy and the child the same remedy. So there was, I saw that connection, so it gave me the confidence to give that remedy to the child. And then the mother needed natrum sulfuricum, which is a huge remedy for depression, and she had asthma. As soon as she took that dose, her asthma got better. So she, that was chronic asthma that she'd been dealing with for most of her life. And so that was something beautiful.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, and one theme that's come up on this show is that people talk about is the importance of the family dynamic in the cure of the kid as well. And I really think that you're really onto something. I mean, it's always beneficial if the parents get treated also so that they can, just so that the whole energy within the family improves, and that helps the child improve. It creates like a better environment,
Absolutely. I don't think you can separate the child out from the family. The whole thing functions as a unit. So, yeah.
I mean, we found in our own family through this process, I talk about it in my book, actually, about how it's really this whole cycle, too, of my son improved, and then my husband and I improved, and then my other son, it was like we were all in this kind of spiral going around and around, all improving, each taking our turn in a way.
Right.
But I think that from a psychic energy point of view, that this idea is fantastic.
I think it is, too. Can I share another very interesting case along this line?
Yes, please.
Okay, so this is a mother, a father, and a son. The son is autistic, and he's about 9 or 10 years old. And he's very interesting in that he goes to sleep at 7 a.m.
Oh.
And wakes up at 5 p.m. And his mother is on the same schedule. So, somebody in the family would have to be on that schedule in order to, for the child to be able to, to handle a child like that. So, and then the mother in her childhood, came from a very, very large family, something like 11 kids. She was the youngest of the children. she was neglected. She got involved and she ran away as a, you know, small child. She got involved in drugs, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Got pregnant out of wedlock, that sort of thing. So her story was a beautiful Metorhinum story. So here you have the little boy who's got the typical Metorhinum sleep, you know, the night person kind of scenario where he's up all night and then sleeps during the day. And he's got a sister who wakes up exactly when he falls asleep. So the father takes care of the sister, the mother takes care of the son.
Wow.
And so, you know, I just got their follow-up from, you know, like 3 weeks into the remedy, and just amazing improvements on him with the Metorhinum.
What kind of changes are they seeing?
They're already seeing that his sleep pattern is becoming more normal. So he was sleeping at 7 a.m. Now he's sleeping at like 2 a.m. So that is improving. Let me see, I'm trying to look at some of the things. His physical appearance looks much better. He says, now he cannot even get tired. He wants to stay up and play. He looks just great. He can have conversations a lot longer. He can concentrate longer. The black under his eyes cleared up, and his coloring looks a lot better. So that was just 3 weeks after the remedy. Those are some of her comments. So they were seeing a lot of changes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, if I hadn't seen that the mother needed the Metorhinum, I probably could have come to Metorhinum for him. But with the mother needing the same remedy, it was like double confirmation to go with this remedy for the child.
So do you dose everybody at the same time?
Yes, that's what I'm doing. I'm sending them, I usually take a day to work on the family, the mother, the father, the child. I try, you know, sometimes it goes longer than that. And I send them all the remedies out in the same packet, and then we do the follow-up at the same time and just kind of work with the family in that way.
What about the other kids?
The other kid, we haven't started on the other kid yet, and they want to do that next month.
So far you just do the parents and then the patient. Yes.
Yeah, but the other kid, she wants to do the other kid too. She's already sent me the questionnaire, but we just haven't started on the other child. Yeah, and then I had just a case fresh in my mind from yesterday. And this is a mother, a father again, same scenario. The father has leukemia. The father's father had leukemia. The father's father's brothers had leukemia.
Wow.
Father's brother has leukemia. So you have this whole scenario, and then you have this child. And then the father's miasm is the malaria miasm. So the remedy I prescribed to him, I haven't mailed it out yet, is China 200C or cinchona bark. So I never thought about this remedy for the child. But then I looked at today I've been just going through and looking at that child. That's not a remedy I would have thought of for him. But now I'm reexamining his case and seeing, you know what, there's a very good possibility that this remedy could help child. I found as I was studying this case, there's a symptom, excitement with flexibility of the limbs. So the child's big physical symptoms is his hand stiffness, where his arms just are waving around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to figure out would you look that up? So I looked up excitement because it happens when he's excited. And as I was searching down, I came across this strange symptom, excitement with flexibility of the limbs. And I'm wondering if that's the way they had called hand stims 100 years ago when whoever maybe came from James Tyler Kent when he made that entry.
Wow.
So, and then there were three remedies that were listed under there, stramonium, coffea, and this China.
And, you know, people often use stramonium or even coffea, you know, but China you wouldn't think of because it sort of goes the opposite way.
You wouldn't think of that, but that's a remedy that has a lot of daydreaming, problems with distractibility, and so that was interesting. That was something, and then the child has the dark circles under his eyes, which is another symptom of this remedy, and a huge, huge, huge bread aggravation. And milk aggravation and all of those things, and weakness of the hands, you can't hold a pencil properly, that sort of thing. So all of those symptoms were under the china. So I'm trying to see, maybe this is a hint to try that remedy for this child. The same remedy as the father has, and then you have that whole leukemia thing running through the family. So maybe in the child it manifested in this form, whereas in the rest of the family it manifests as leukemia. And maybe the child would get leukemia in the future. Who knows?
Yeah. Wow, this is fantastic, Deborah.
It's interesting.
What gave you the idea to start this?
I just kind of fell upon it, you know. And I've been doing this now with a whole bunch of other people. Like I had an autistic child doing really, really very, very well on phosphorus. Almost all symptoms cleared, just beautifully, but one or two things not moving. So I took the parent's case, and the father is a perfect silica. Absolutely, like classic textbook. So then when you look at the repertorization, I see, okay, silica and phosphorus are side by side.
Right.
On the repertorization, because in this particular child's case. So I thought, okay, you know, and the dust allergies and these kinds of things, which have not gotten better on the phosphorus, so maybe we'll try the silica, which is the father's remedy. So just looking at these family connections is pretty amazing.
I'm just curious, do you see any kind of sort of relationship between the mother's and the father's remedies?
Sometimes, like, does the mother need the same remedy as the father?
Or, like, there's some sort of symbiotic relationship between the remedies? You know, they've even had a book about relationships, you know, between remedies, like relationships between astrological signs, but instead remedies.
Yeah, I think sometimes you do see that. One of the interesting things is that the remedies that you see coming through for the moms, like two of the moms, Natrum Sulfuricum was coming through. Natrum Sulfuricum is a big remedy for depression. And one of them had had a head injury. So Natrum Sulfuricum is a big remedy for depression and after head injury. And she also had a lot of memory loss problems. And there's, suicidal tendency, also suicidal depression. So I guess also with her son's problems, that has been accentuated. And just to see the parents' reactions, and then the other mother I'm giving arsenicum to, which has the anxiety, feeling like she has to go into overdrive, and, you know, she doesn't feel like she can get sick, because if she gets sick, then the whole family will fall apart, and she has to hold everything together. So that's the cancer miasm.
Have you seen the children needing more the remedy of the father or the mother, or is it by the sex of the child, or no particular pattern?
No particular. It seems like often it seems lately it's been more the father, which is, you know, strange, but that seems to have been, in a lot of the cases, it's been more the father than the mother, but in some cases it's been the mother.
Have you had anywhere, like, the father wasn't around, so or parent wasn't available, or dead, or divorced, or something, and then...
Well, of the cases that I've done, that hasn't been the situation.
Right.
But like some children I'm treating with very severe behavioral problems and jealousy and hatred of the sibling, and the mother turns out to need Lachesis. And so then you get the jealousy, the hatred, and all of those things coming up, the severe behavioral problems coming up in the children. So that's, then I give the child the Lachesis and the mother the Lachesis, and you have the families doing much better.
So I'm curious, when you have the family come for this thing, or you've done it some on the phone too, right?
Right.
What can people expect? What is this whole process like?
Okay, well, what I ask them to do is I ask them for first of all, the child's questionnaire, to fill out the child's questionnaire, to fill out the mother's questionnaire, the father's questionnaire. I ask for a video of the child, a 20 to 30 minute video of the child, and a photograph of the family of the children.
This is for the remote cases.
This is for the remote cases.
Yeah.
And yeah, the videos are very, very helpful, and I think they're absolutely necessary for when you're treating children remotely, to have a video.
And then, just for people to know, what's the appointment like?
Okay, so what I'm doing is, to try to make this affordable for people, I came upon the idea of just charging. I used to charge a flat rate for all of my services, so I decided just to charge an hourly rate. And so if it's a very simple, so I charge $80 an hour. So if it's a very, very simple case, it might be an hour and a half, so $120. If it's more, you know, and then I have a cap, so I don't charge above 4 hours. So if it exceeds 4 hours, I don't charge them for the extra time. So the average person has been taking 2.5 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours on average for the parents. That's the kind of time. So it ends up costing about $200 to $240 per parent. So something. And again, if it's really simple and I can do it in an hour, it would cost much less. Yeah, so that makes it more affordable for people.
And by the way, I know, just for people to know, Deborah does use a really extensive questionnaire. A lot of homeopaths don't do that, but I personally found when I filled out her questionnaire, it was really useful to me as well. You know, so I think I probably sent you more information than any other patient.
Yeah.
I think I wrote 15 pages.
Yeah, so that was good. That's very, very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to take a moment just to talk a little bit about Rajan Sankaran and his work.
Oh, yeah, please do.
And his influence. So Rajan Sankaran has been writing books, I guess, now since around the 1990s, and he wrote The Sensation of Homeopathy, The Spirit of Homeopathy, The Soul of Remedies, and then a book called Sensations in Homeopathy, and then The Insight into Plants and Minerals. So there's tons and tons of books. It's absolutely overwhelming. But his system is really, really brilliant. And one of his premises or his idea is that every person has what he calls your human song and your other song. So your human song, it's like, you know, if, for example, an elephant would have an elephant song, a lion would have a lion song. This is something that's common to the species and makes the elephant an elephant, the human being a human being. And then the other song is the thing that's out of place in the human sphere. So what that is, it's like the song of the illness. And so what the job of the homeopath is to figure out what is the other song. So the other song could be something that comes from the animal, mineral, plant kingdom, or nosodes. And so that's one of our jobs, is to figure out what that other song is.
That's a beautiful thing. I've never heard of that analogy.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. And I'll give you a beautiful example of that. I had a client, a little boy, in my office about 10 days ago, and he came in, and the first thing I saw him do was kill a spider. And then he says, "Oh, you know, I really hate spiders, and I'm afraid of tarantulas and all sorts of, you know, tarantulas." And then he proceeded to name, you know, 20 types of spiders that he was afraid of. And then I asked him, "What do you like to do?" And what he loves to do is he loves to go bungee jumping. So they have a contraption in their house where he could just bounce up and down, like you imagine a spider jumping, bounce up and down on the thing. And then he liked to take the sweaters and unravel the threads from his sweater. So all of his sweaters were unraveled at the sleeves. Again, you can imagine a spider pulling the threads out
right,
to spin its web.
It's almost like two textbooks.
It was just too beautiful. And then the other thing is that usually in a tarantula case, there's some sort of jealousy going on where they feel like somebody else is getting the accolades, the attention that they feel that they equally deserve, but that other person is getting it and they're not getting it. I have had like three tarantula children recently where that was the scenario. And so that was just beautiful. So in this case, the other song was tarantula, so it was an animal remedy. So that's the, you know, that's the idea. And then the other beautiful thing about Sankaran's system is the understanding of miasms. So Samuel Hahnemann identified three miasms: the soric miasm, the psychotic miasm, the syphilitic miasm, and he believed that all diseases came from a combination of these miasms. So Sankaran has gone through and he's identified 10 different miasms. And this is extremely, extremely helpful in trying to figure out the remedy for a person. Because, for example, that child yesterday, and when taking the father's case, what was easiest for me to identify was the miasm. So the miasm was the malaria miasm. So then once I identify the miasm, then you can focus in and you can look at the remedies that are in that miasm. And then you can, then the next job is to figure out, does he need animal, mineral, plant? So it's like it creates a system that you can figure things out with. So animal, mineral, plant, you know the miasm, then you have to figure out the, there's a lot of other things, but those were the basic things. And he says in order to really figure these things out, you have to look for the sensation of the chief complaint. So you look to see what is the chief complaint that that person has, and then you really, really explore it. You understand the emotions around it and all of those things, and that way everything will fall into place. You learn the miasm, you learn the kingdom, you learn the particular animal, plant, or mineral that it is. So I'm trying to learn this system.
Yes, I'm curious. I mean, just for people to know, this Sankaran's work has just really taken the homeopathic world by storm because people are getting very good results with it. So, I mean, how do you feel, you know, it impacts all, I mean, you've worked with other methods all these years. Do you put it all together? I mean, how do you combine it all?
It's been extremely challenging because Sankaran's methods, even his idea of the, you know, of the sensations and of these miasms, this is not even maybe 7 years old. This is just recent. His book, The Sensations, came out in 2002. His plant books came out, you know, maybe 2005. So this is all very, very new in homeopathy. And, yeah, it's a very, very different way to look at things, and it's something that takes a great deal of practice to figure out how to do. And to really understand it in a deep way, it's not easy to fathom. And so the old method was you gathered the symptoms, you know, whatever, you gathered the symptoms, and that's what I do. I still use the old method. I gather all the symptoms and I repertorize. So I look up all of the symptoms, and I use MAC repertory. And I use reference works rather than the repertory, because in reference works you can actually go to the original source and see exactly what does it say about that particular symptom. So you can read about it and see, does that match what the client says, or is it way off base? In a traditional repertory, you can't do that because you see the symptom, but you don't really know what was underneath the symptom. So then I go and I look up all of the various symptoms, and so then you can look at it numerically. So you see which remedies come at the top, which remedies come in first place, which remedies come later. But what usually happens is that you get the Polycrest remedies at the very, very top, almost in all cases. So that means you're going to get sulfur, you're going to get phosphorus, you're going to get silica, you're going to get calcarea, you're going to get sepia, you're going to get natrum muriaticum. You're going to get those coming at the very, very top. And the rest of the 2,000-3,000 remedies that there are going to be falling way, way back because they're way underrepresented. So Sankaran's system is trying to, you know, bring those other remedies into play as well. And also to connect you with what the item actually is. So here I'm looking here at a particular repertorization, and I'm seeing belladonna at the top. Okay, so belladonna is a plant remedy. Phosphorus comes in next, a mineral remedy. Calcarea is plant and mineral. Marita carb, nat mur, china, pulsatilla is a plant. So you can have a look. Before, we didn't really know whether this was a plant, this was an animal. Interest wasn't there. We were looking just to look at it numerically and then go through, read your materia medica and see, does this fit? Does this one fit? Does this one fit? Whether it was a snake or a raccoon, we didn't really care. Or we didn't know because the connection wasn't there. So the modern trend in homeopathy is to reunite the remedy to its source and marry that to the person who needs that particular remedy.
And it's not that the old methods are thrown out. It's more like we now have more information to.
Yeah, I use them side by side. I use both methods because, for example, if I use Sankaran's method and it came to, for example, Ignatia for a remedy, But then, you know, I thought it was Ignatia. But then I go and I look under Ignatia and I see, oh, but the person has a, whatever, chapped lips, and Ignatia does not have chapped lips. Well, is that important? Is that, does that mean I shouldn't use Ignatia? So it's a judgment call. And I have to look, you know, if I think it's Ignatia using Sankara's method, but it doesn't have the chief complaint, then I'm going to say, hey, maybe I did something wrong. Maybe this isn't good. I'll re-examine. Maybe I have missed something.
Right. I mean, I was thinking you were there when I did that one day, or maybe it was a weekend with Sankaran. And I noticed that, you know, you could come to the remedy either way, using his method or just traditional.
That's
the
true.
Same remedy, you know.
That's true, but it gives you, if both methods bring you to the remedy, that's really wonderful.
Yeah, then it's true confirmation.
Yeah.
So I'm just, now we have only like about, I only want to spend like another 5 minutes or less. We're actually gone over, but one thing I often ask, what do you feel, do you feel there's anything that separates out your successful patients from those that are less successful? What can parents do?
Okay, I love this question.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a client, a little boy, where I gave the client, the little boy, silica. He is he was diagnosed with dysgraphia and a bunch of other things. You know, fine motor delays, gross motor delays, all sorts of things like that. And you know, after he received his 200 C strength of the remedy, and he was doing well, but not all the way, and his mom kept on being ready to give up, you know, oh, you know, it helped this and this, but really he didn't get better in this, and this, and no, I don't want to continue, and that's it. And I would say, no, let's continue. We took him up to the 1M strength, and he is, like, just absolutely good. The child has been healed, so it took taking him up to the higher strength of the remedy. So it took the parents not giving up when there's a setback. It took them being faithful, and it took them persisting in the process and maintaining contact. Because if she had given up after that 200 C dose and run to another homeopath and say, no, this is not helping, and then he wouldn't have come to this place where he is now, where he's doing wonderfully, and now the mother brought the daughter in just last week because she was so pleased with what was happening with the son. But I had to really, I had to be a coach to keep her on, to keep her motivated, to keep her having the faith to do it.
And this is a big issue in this community because they're trying so many things. There's so much anxiety for a quick progress. That, you know, I always say patience. So that's
so, yeah, I think patience gets the results. And also, the challenges a homeopath working with an autistic kid are enormous because the homeopathy is absolutely verbally based. And you're having a child who is not having words. It's very, very, very difficult, you know, to really understand what the emotions are, what's going on. So in the autistic child, you sing the other song very, very strongly, but you sing the human song where they're expressing the those things are less because the disease is higher, and it becomes very, very hard to really know what's going on. That's why I feel like, you know, seeing what's going on with the parents is necessary here.
Have you had any success with older kids or even experience with older kids?
Well, by older, you mean, how old are you talking about?
Well, you know, let's just say even 8, 9.
Well, that one child I was telling you about who goes to sleep, who's awake all night, so he's about 9, 10 years old.
So, what about even older, like a teenager?
Yeah. And again, I had been working with one family, and they haven't persisted after some setbacks, but I have had success.
You know, there's been a lot of talk, as you know, on that on the homeopathy for special needs list about liquid versus dry dosing, and I know you do both. Do you have any protocol, or how do you decide what to do with that?
I think this issue should be dropped.
I agree, actually. I
think it's absolutely ridiculous, a ridiculous issue. I mean, the remedy works whether you take it dry, whether you take it wet, whether you sniff it, it works. And so I think that's just a waste of time to be going over that and you know, pulling hairs about that issue. The point is to get the right remedy. It's going to work in any form that you give it.
Yeah. Well, I actually just posted something about that to the list because I know some people are, you know, people write to me and they say, should I leave my homeopath because they don't use, you know, liquid? And I said, not if you're getting results. That's crazy, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, it makes no difference. It really doesn't. The remedy is going to work. You know, I have been using dry dose remedies for, you know, for over 20 years, and they work.
Right.
And these days I'm using more water because, you know, I'm having them take water in the mouth. If they're taking a dry dose, you know, put a lot of water in your mouth at the same time or right afterward and swish it around a lot just to cover all the mucous membranes. But I don't think it really makes any difference.
Yeah. Well, for some people it might, but for most people it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, let me think. Is that it? Is there any one last thing you'd like to say?
I just have a lot of admiration for the families out there and love for them and admiration for the dedication and the sacrifices that people go through for their children. What can I say? I'm in awe.
That's why I opened the show today saying, if any mothers deserve a happy Mother's Day, it's these moms.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And your daughter's coming home today?
She's coming home. I haven't seen her for a year and a half.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. She's in Brazil?
Uruguay. Huh?
In Uruguay.
My son is in Peru, so he's coming home next week, so I'm going to get my kids back.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
That's so wonderful.
I know.
Oh.
Thank you, Amy.
Yeah. So I want to thank you again. It was really interesting. I'm really excited about this, about what you're doing with the family thing.
Thank you very much.
And so I'll talk to you later, and I'm gonna pause again, and then I'll finish the show.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll see you later this week, actually.
Okay.
Okay, wait. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, and once again, I've gone way over, but that's all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. I think it was really interesting. Once again, a reminder to visit the following websites. My book website, impossiblecure.com. Also useful is the Homeopathy for Special Needs Children Yahoo list, and you can find out about that at homeopathysnc.org. And finally, reminding you to support the important work of the National Center for Homeopathy. That's nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. So be well, and remember, there really is hope with homeopathy.